Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. For more on our 2021 offers, contact your local Kia dealer or log on to kia.com.
1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. And Joe at RT.ie. I'll give you over the course of the programme, because we're doing self-published books, which will be fascinating, but I will update you as we get more information in on the new restrictions as and from the 24th of December, which is Christmas Eve, which is, I presume, midnight tomorrow night. Visitors to your home from midnight tomorrow night, in other words, from 1 minute past midnight on Christmas Eve, from December 24th, two other households max from the 27th of December, which is the day after St. Stephen's Day, obviously, the 27th of December, beginning at midnight, one other household max. From the 1st of January, no visitors allowed. Okay, two other households from Christmas Eve until the day until the midnight on St. Stephen's night, then one other household, and then from until midnight on New Year's Eve, and then from the 1st of January, no visitors whatsoever. Travel outside your county, yes, from December 24th. From December 27th, now this is the day after St. Stephen's Day, no travel outside your county except to return home after Christmas, and from the 1st of January, no travel outside your county, full stop. Now, there's the first bit of confusion there, because the Minister, Stephen Donnelly, said, kept referring to St. Stephen's Day on the 26th, but the government guidelines, and that's where I'm reading from, and I'm reading from any newspaper report on the government guidelines say, from the 27th of December, which is the day after St. Stephen's Day, no travel outside your county. In other words, can you travel on St. Stephen's Day outside your county and stay away for as long as you want? Restaurants and pubs operating as restaurants closed at 3 p.m. on Christmas Eve, closed in its entirety from then on. Closed from the 27th of December, 1st of January closed onwards. So from 3 p.m. on Christmas Eve, the restaurants and pubs that are currently operating are gone, closed, and closed indefinitely. Places of worship from Christmas Eve, 50 max. From the day after St. Stephen's Day, the 27th of December, private and online worship only, and that continues into the new year indefinitely. Retail will be open on the 24th of December, can reopen on the 27th of December. Now, does that mean, can they open on St. Stephen's Day, as so many of them normally do? Retail open from 27th of January, from 27th of December, but with no January sales. Now, the January sales, as you know, normally begin at 8 o'clock on St. Stephen's Day morning in the last few years, but we presume they're gone, but no January sales. How do you police that? You just have people putting up signs, but everyone knows there's going to be a sale. From the 1st of January, open, but no January sales. So that's a big thing. Retail, all retail can stay open. Weddings, 25 people max from 24th of December. From the 27th of December, continuing 25 people max. 25 people, excuse me, on January 1 and 2. Okay, 25 people January 1 and 2. But if you've planned to get married on January 3, you're down to a max of 6 people from there on. Max of 6 people from January 3. Hotels, little bit confusing again. Can serve food to guests, to non-guests. Can serve food to non-guests until 3 p.m. on Christmas Eve. Until 3 p.m. on Christmas Eve. From the 27th of December, can provide food to guests only. And that continues from the 1st of January. Now, I'll just go through some more details. Again, confusion, but we'll, as I say, we'll come back to this throughout the programme. Exercise and sporting, gyms, leisure centres and swimming pools may remain open for individual training and only. You know, hairdressers, etc., are gone from 3 o'clock. That's my understanding. They are gone on Christmas Eve. Just the time is a little bit confusing, but it sounds like it's 3 o'clock. wet pubs, obviously gone, nightclubs, discos, casinos. Sure, what are they? Does anyone remember what they are, in fact? Hotels and guest houses and B&Bs may remain open, but only for essential, non-social and non-tourist purposes. Guests who already have a booking and are due to check in up to and including the 26th of December, St. Stephen's Day, I presume up to midnight. Guests who already have a booking and are due to check in up to and including 26th of December can do so. Okay, they can do so. Work from home unless essential. Obviously, not as big an issue as was before, given the Christmas break. But you will be surprised. You will be surprised at the number of companies that insisted on their workers coming in when they didn't have to come in. And young workers, and I'm not talking about retail who've been brilliant, but young workers in offices especially were made to come into work when they shouldn't have been. They could have easily worked from home. Exercises close to home as possible. 27th of January, 27th of December, you stay within your county. Schools and creches are going to stay open. Higher and adult education, primarily online, but that's been the way with exemptions for essential on-site activities. Outdoor playgrounds can stay open with protective measures. Transport, 25%. Capacity, 25% capacity. Visiting long-term residential care facilities, nursing and care homes, this is a major blow, suspended, with the exception of visits required for critical and compassionate circumstances. Now, we presume they're suspended from December 24th. We don't know. It's unclear when this comes in. It just says suspended. It doesn't say suspended with immediate effect. It says suspended. So that's going to be a bitter, bitter blow to anyone in a nursing home, or indeed anyone who has relatives in a nursing home, and indeed anyone who was working in a nursing home, because it's the staff in the nursing home that have to have to help their residents in their distress at the moment. As soon as I get more clarity, or if you have more clarity from stuff you've heard, I'm confused after listening to some dates that Stephen Donnelly referred to between St. Stephen's Day and December 27th. The document doesn't refer to St. Stephen's Day. It refers to December 24th for some changes, 3 o'clock on that day, and December 27th. For other changes. It doesn't mention, with one exception, December 26th. Okay, let's go to our self-published, if we can. Annette Egan, our producer today, obviously has a great sense of humour, because the first book she's given me to talk to is a man called Richard B, who I presume there's a reason to this Richard B. Is there Richard B?
Good afternoon, Joe. Happy Christmas to you.
Yeah, and you too, and many more of them. Now, the reason why I say sense of humour is this is a Flaneur's Guide, Paris, the Left Bank. Sure, we'll never see Paris again, except on Google Earth.
Exactly, Joe, and it was really the motivation behind it. We can't go to all these places, and Paris in particular, and anyone who's been has such fantastic, generally, memories, so the idea was to put them all down and almost a bit of armchair travelling.
That's superb. It really is. And you do the Irish connection. By the way, beautifully produced. But you won't give me your full name. Is that what you're saying?
Well, Joe, it's not about me. It's about the book. You know, you mentioned the Irish connection. And the Irish College, interestingly, was founded in the late 1500s, where the Irish priests had to go over and study when the English Crown closed down a lot of the Irish monasteries. And the current building that's there was built in 1776, and it was reopened, some people might remember, by Mary Robinson and François Mitterrand in 2002, and is really well worth a visit for any Irish travellers when they get to go over there, hopefully next year.
But is everywhere you refer to, does it have an Irish connection? No.
No, Joe. No, the whole idea, I can give. I don't know if you do. Would you like the background story on it?
Yeah, briefly, yeah.
So there's a guy, he's from Pakistan, he's in his 60s now, called Ali, and he's a street vendor, he sells Le Monde, and anyone who's been around Saint-Germain or the Latin Quarter, they might see him. He's basically like an old school, if you remember the Herald or Press criers at the time.
I'm looking at him now, yeah.
Yeah, and a very friendly guy, and he'd always have funny lines to sell the newspaper, and I would always stop and chat to him, and I ran into him 2 years ago. And I said, Ali, how are the papers going? And needless to say, he said, no one's buying them. You know, everyone's reading the news online. And I just said, Ali, what you need is a little book to sell yourself. You take the profits. I'll do up a little summary of all the places that I've visited over the years. And that's where it came from. So, Joe, you're right. Not all the connections are Irish, but a lot of the places people would know.
Okay, fantastic. And you've listed 120 different places on the left bank, which is incredible. Absolutely incredible. And Ali will be selling this from his stall.
He will. I've sent him over his copy. Unfortunately, there are practically no tourists in Paris.
Of course.
But the plan is when things pick up. But like some of your listeners may know, for example, like Joyce's Ulysses was published in 1922.
Of course, yeah.
Eileen Gray, you know, probably the most successful architect and furniture designer in the world. Like, she designed a chair that Yves Saint Laurent bought and then sold at auction for 50 million euro. She lived on the Rue Bonaparte. There was a plaque erected in her name in the last couple of years. Samuel Beckett obviously lived in Montparnasse, you know, for most of his life, buried in Montparnasse Cemetery.
And Oscar Wilde and the Irish connection, James Joyce connection.
Exactly.
Now, Richard, how long have you lived in Paris?
Well, Joe, I went over there in 1989.
Wow.
And I don't know if you remember the International Herald Tribune.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
If you ever saw the film, Jean-Luc Godard's film called Breathless, with Gene Seberg selling the Herald Tribune on the Champs-Élysées, I saw that when I was in college and said I had to go. So it really has, I won't even count up all the years for you.
And a flâneur is what?
Joe, basically a flâneur, it comes from the French word flâner, which I'm sure some of your listeners, if they remember their French, is a regular verb, flâner. It's basically to walk around with no specific purpose. Now, it's an alien concept in the world that we live in today in 2020, but you walk around the city and you observe and you take in. It was a 19th century concept that Baudelaire popularized, and the idea is that there's so much to see if we slow down and just observe.
Yeah.
So if you Google it, for example, a flâneur, you know, there's a famous sketch of the flâneur taking his tortoise out for a walk, because that was the whole idea, that you just slow down, take things in, and observe things simply for what they are.
Okay, so where can people get A Flâneur's Guide, Paris, the Left Bank? Really beautiful book, really lovely book. Where can you get it?
Joe, it's being sold online. It's on www.aflaneursguide.com.
Okay.
And for the modicum sum of €11.95.
Great, yeah.
And the idea is, obviously, look,
okay,
while people can travel, they can buy it and enjoy it and then hopefully bring it with them.
And Paris is in lockdown, is it, Richard?
Yes, it is. They've revised some of the restrictions, but similar to ourselves, they're changing every couple of weeks, and obviously they've stopped travel as well from the
UK. And what about bars and pubs and
Absolutely,
cafe.
Joe.
There are quite
a few bars. Like, the thing about Paris, everybody comes back from Paris with the story, if you remember the old days, where they got charged €20 for a pint of lager on, you know, the Place Saint-Michel. That's the classic, and they've never recovered. But I purposely have put in a few little places where things are very affordable, and even some practical tips. Like, for example, Joe, a lot of people wouldn't know, if you have a drink, let's say a coffee or a beer, a glass of wine, up at the counter, it's half price. So people sit down outside, you know, because it's quite attractive, and they're out late at night, and they're getting charged through the nose, where literally you can have a coffee for €1 up the counter. So plenty of little tips. There's a hotel, the Hotel Marignan, in there, just beside the Cluny Museum. You can stay there for €60 a night, 60-70 euro if you go on the website. So the whole idea is really to show you, like, there's two sides to Paris. There's the expensive Paris, but then there's the real Paris, and the idea is to give people an insight into those places.
Okay,
that really
but in the meantime, Richard, Paris is closed.
It is, Joe.
Bars, restaurants, cafes, the whole thing gone. Finito.
It is. Well, you know, they're getting by, Joe. They're surviving. And the thing about Paris is it never changes. Like, it's been there for centuries.
Okay, and it's a good time for wandering around the place anyway in the lockdown. But anyway, it's brilliant, lovely. Paris, the Left Bank by Richard B. Details going up. The Irish Wise Guys is the stories of the most notorious Irish-American gangsters. Why this isn't published by a mainstream publisher, I do not know. It's written by John Joe McGinley. The book tells the story of America's most notorious Irish-American gangsters. Poverty, brutality, criminal empires. It's written by John Joe McGinley. and we will put our details, and it's published by, you'll find, this is your gateway into finding it. It's published by Ballpoint Press at a price of $14.99. And again, really, just if you saw that, thanks, Richard. If you saw that on the bookshelf in Easton, you wouldn't be surprised. Orphaned in the '50s, A Monaghan Man's Story of Survival by Francie Traynor. Born in the '40s, bereft of both parents at a very young age, one man's struggle, the harsh realities of life. Francie Traynor, up in Monaghan, and again. It's his journey through life. Okay, Beneath the Visible, Elizabeth Sheehan. Duke never thought he was special. He was a normal teenager growing up in a world that made sense. Nothing out of the ordinary happened to people like him until it did. And I presume this is aimed at that age group, but it's published by, let me get the full details, Orla Kelly. That came up yesterday as well. Orla Kelly Publishing, Kilbrody, Mount Oval. These are all self-published books. In other words, people are investing their own money in publishing them, and they didn't manage or indeed seek to get a mainstream publisher like Lily Putt or Hachette or whatever to publish their books. But that's Beneath the Visible. Again, teenagery book from Elizabeth Sheehan. Okay, there's another one there. Joxer Daily. Sean O'Casey will never be dead. Joxer Daily, and this is written by Edward Hill, a big tome, a tale of war, love and loyalty. All 420 pages of it. And that is available from kavanagh.mail at googlemail.com. And another epic, great. We're going to need epics over the Christmas. Union of Worlds Deception by Kieran Ryan. Sci-fi, obviously, from the cover. Kieran Ryan's the author of the Union of the Worlds series of books. So if that's what you're into, there's another one out. He lives in Galway and the west of Ireland with his wife. And that's the Kieran Ryan. Again, all the details, just Google them and you will get them. Loads more books to come after the break. 51551, my chance.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
We featured yesterday a number of self-published books by ex-Gardaí. Well, there's a fine tome here. It's called A Question of Honour, Politics and Policing, The Inside Story by John O'Brien. Now, I think you would know John O'Brien from his commentary on radio and television. He retired as a detective chief super, and he has written a fine book, both in terms of his own story, 460 pages, guys. And he makes it, it's again, really well researched. And he has one, where was it again? I was reading earlier. But yeah, page 395. I'll just give you this to really upset your Christmas. And it was a speech delivered at the McGill Summer School. And it's great to see that John O'Brien is researching and picked up on these things. It's a piece, Supreme Court Judge Peter Charlton delivered a lecture to the McGill Summer School in 219. Does anyone remember 219? I don't. His talk was prescient. Significantly, he said that a tribunal is the opinion of one person and not a trial verdict. But this is the sting. In his speech, Supreme Court Judge Peter Charlton said the tribunal system had become totemic and symbolic and is constantly in peril of toppling over. He emphasised the difference in cost outcomes between the UK and Ireland, pointing out that the Leveson inquiry into journalistic phone tapping in the UK cost some 5.4 million sterling, while the Iraq inquiry cost 10 million. He said the final bill for tribunals in Ireland regularly runs into tens of millions, with the planning tribunal alone costing, wait for this, 150 million euro. He said Irish tribunals are characterised, I'm sure John is quoting the learned judge in context, by a scrum of lawyers and the involvement with dozens of people. It just goes on and on and on. But it's this book is not just full of stories about his life as a guard, but also full of those observations. Who's next? Dan, Des Coyley. Des, this is another Wexford history. Give us two little stories from your book. It's called Fascinating Wexford History. It's volume 2 by Des Coyley, and it's available in all bookshops in County Wexford. Go ahead, Des.
Thanks, Joe, for inviting me on.
Off you go, yeah.
I could jump into one. I could talk about the shooting Private Ryan on a Wexford beach. Mm-hmm. I'm sure everyone's well familiar with the opening scene, the harrowing scene of the movie. And I'll tell you briefly about that one. The film took about 25 days of filming around Kirkaclough, and the first beach that was chosen by Steven Spielberg was Ballyvaloo Beach, just north of Kirkaclough. The St. John of God Convent was to put up the crew during filming, but the nuns told Spielberg that he'd have to wait until August. He wanted to shoot it in June. So he was going to go off elsewhere, probably to England, but an official from Wexford County Council met him for a pint down on Crescent Quay in Wexford and suggested Ballinasker Beach. It's just a little bit north there of Kirkaclough. So Spielberg had found his Normandy, as you could say. They transformed the beach into Omaha Beach in Normandy, mm-hmm. and turned into a German stronghold with barbed wire and bunkers, forts. The FCA supplied, and the Irish Army supplied 750 members, each paid £40 a day for the 20-minute sequence. Some of them were already movie veterans, you could say, because they'd already taken part in Braveheart a couple of years earlier. Now, they also employed about 20 disabled extras. These were amputees who were paid an extra, £16. They were on £56 a day, and they were fitted with prosthetic limbs, which were blown off under the bombardment. So
that's how it's
made
done.
It so realistic on screen, you know?
That's how it's done. And, Des, like, the wonderful thing about your book is it's full of brilliant stories. Southeast's largest freshwater lake created in the 1850s. That's where, Des, that's behind...
In Johnstown Castle, where I go for my walks every other day.
The connection between the Caravaggio in the National Gallery, close to being our most valuable painting, and Wexford, and indeed Gorey, briefly in 12 words or less, because it's...
12 words or less. Well, that brings me nicely to that one, because a woman called Marley Ryan was married to this chap called Percival Lee Wilson.
Yeah.
Now, very quickly, he was RIC officer, and he mistreated the GPO volunteers who surrendered and were marched to the back of the Rotunda Hospital. Now, that Rotunda Gardens is now...
And he forced, the legend is, he forced Tom Clark to strip naked.
To strip, we run forward then 4 years from 1920. What's his name? Lee Wilson. He was stationed in Gorey. He was district inspector. And Michael Collins had sent his hit squad to assassinate him. He was wandering along the Ballyvenue Road to his house, and he was shot dead. Now, we roll on another 4 years. Mm-hmm. His widow was getting counselling from the Jesuits in Leeson Street, and she donated a painting she had bought in Edinburgh on a trip in 1924. She paid £8 for it, and that was valued in 1993 at amazing 100 million euro.
Wow.
And now hangs in the National Gallery. I mean, people from around the world travel to Dublin just to see the Caravaggio.
It's an incredible
story. The taking
story.
Of Christ. Incredible
but
story. That
where
one.
Can people get your book? Because it's just full of all those brilliant stories. It's not a... It's each divided into... Each chapter is a story. Where can people get it?
They get it in any bookshop in County Wexford. It's my third book, Joe. I can't believe it. My first one was...
Can people get
Wexford
it online,
people.
Given that people outside Wexford won't be able to travel to Wexford from the day
Absolutely.
After St. Stephen's Day?
You can get it on Amazon as well, of course.
Okay, well done. Fascinating. It's brilliant. Well done. It's a credit to you, Des. Wexford History, Volume 2, Des Kiley. Where is Ruth Calder Potts? Ruth Calder Potts produces it's called High Bank Orchards, and this is... This is a cookbook, isn't it?
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Good, thanks. Tell us about your book.
Yeah, it's a cookbook. My family own a Highbank Orchard, which is an organic apple tree farm down in Kilkenny. And we make everything from apple syrup to gin and vodka and a new apple wine.
And in fact, am I right in saying that some of it has been doing the rounds here in RTE in lockdown?
It has. It's been quite popular in the studio.
No, what I'm saying, I think one of your relations, or soon-to-be relations, works here.
My fiancé works in RTE.
Oh, that's your chap.
Jamie
is your chap.
Yeah,
I didn't know that. Well done. I know he's been.
Yeah.
He's been. Is he working part time in sales for Highbank Orchards? Because he's been going around. Have you heard? But anyway, he's brilliant, and he's a great actor too, as you know. Ruth, now in the movies. Now Ruth. So this is a beautifully produced. It's a cookbook, a beautifully produced cookbook. But are you using the ingredients that you produce on the farm?
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. So I'm a photographer by profession, and I started working with my family. Always I've been working with my family as well. And so many people ask us what to do with some of our products because we have treacle and syrup. So I decided to make a cookbook with lovely history about the farm and the integrity of an organic farm and what goes on. So this is the first volume one. And then we'll continue on because chefs do wonderful things with their stuff as well.
Beautifully photographed, surprise, surprise. Beautiful layout. I love the typography. Really clear and beautifully produced. Like, would sit really well beside Nigella or Rachel or Nevin or any of the celebrity chefs. And it's from Highbank Orchards, and confidently you write on the cover, Volume 1.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we thought, why not be confident? And also, when I did it, anything worth doing, may as well do it well. So I got a wonderful chef, Erica Drum, to recipe test all the recipes just to make sure that everything was correct, and she styled everything. So we wanted to do it justice. If we were going to do
really
it, we weren't going to half-ass it, really.
You really have. And it's available, I presume, from Highbank Orchards in Cuffs Grange in Kilkenny. You'll remember that. Tell us the story briefly about Hilton. When he was two.
Yeah. He was two. So basically, a big reason our farm's been organic for over 30 years, and one of the big turning points was when my brother, he's 35 now, but when he was two, he was wandering around the farm and he picked up some pesticide and ingested it. And my dad luckily was there, and he thought, thinking quickly, he put soil into his mouth, and that neutralizes the poison, and rushed him to hospital. And the doctor said if my dad hadn't done that, my brother would most likely have died. So this got Dad thinking of going, if this is what this does to a human being in its pure form, what on earth is it doing to my plants? So from that time on, not one pesticide has gone onto our farms. We've turned everything organic, not even the organically certified sprays have gone onto our farm.
And Highbank Organic Farm products are available in supermarkets, I'm told.
They are, yeah. They're we're in Dunnes under their own label, pardon me, of Simply Better.
Oh, great.
But we're
also,
we're all over, all the stockists of, with great support from so many little shops all across the country.
Okay, I'll give the reference to the website. Your favourite recipe in 12 words or less, Ruth Calder, Pots of Highbank Orchards.
It would be good shit bread.
Yeah, go ahead.
So good shit bread, it does exactly what it says on the tin, but it's also really, really easy to make, and it's very healthy, and it keeps your insides working really, really well.
Okay. We'll photograph that and put it up on Twitter with your permission, that we're not breaking any copyright. Highbankorchards.com is where you'll get all. Well done. Congratulations, Ruth. It's a beautiful product.
Thank you very much.
High-class product from Highbank Orchards, Ruth Calder Potts. Where is Peter O'Shea? I love this one. I've been looking at this for the last few days because I think I read last week. When is the last time you had a version of Murder Most Foul, and indeed Murder Most Local, Historic Murders of West Cork by Peter O'Shea?
Good afternoon to you, Joe.
You had one of these before, didn't you?
So last year we done North Cork, and the year before I'd done the East Cork edition. So I suppose Cork is a big county, and this year we're doing Clonakilty west to the Bear Peninsula. There's 39 murders in all.
And just to remind people, we go back to the beginning of the 19th century, 1815, 18, yeah.
There's one out in Cape Clear, in 1815. It's a bizarre twist of offence.
Where do you get all your information from? Because a lot of these murders are well over 100 years
I suppose
since they happened.
You start sometimes with the executions, you start sometimes with the folklore story, other times you start with more the court records, the and maybe a newspaper clipping, and then it just expands out from there, you know, and you kind of put yourself in position and say, you know, I'm doing one at the moment, thinking, why would it have happened and how would it have happened, yeah. And you have to think it through.
And you they're brilliantly written. They're written like crime stories, which they are, but like A Hatchet Job is one of them. I Will Kill Him For Sure. Many people have said that. That was in Skibbereen in 1865. And there are many, about 50 stories?
There's 39. So last year the book was bigger, but the murder went on a bit longer. But this, I suppose it just shows you how...
And many of the murders are unsolved.
I suppose a few only really that are unsolved. But then some, like there's one here outside Rosscarbery in a little place called Ratbarry. It could you say it was solved or not? The brother gets hung for it, but you know, one of the family had to do it, but nobody would admit anything.
Have you noticed the number of crime novels that are now being set in West Cork?
Yeah, and I suppose when we found ourselves going to West Cork, everyone talks about a particular murder, which I won't go into. But you know, we find that every parish, every area, you're within 4 or 5 miles of a murder. There's something happened, and it just shows you the time. That
Louise O'Neill this year, that's in West Cork. The Guest List, that's set in island off West Cork. Alex Barkley writes a number of our crime novels. They're big selling ones. They've been set in West Cork, and the list, it goes on and on and on, especially around island murders, or murders in bleak, unforgiving places, so to speak. Murder Most Local, Historic Murders of West Cork by Peter O'Shea. Where can people get it, Peter?
So we're in all the local small bookshops in Cork, and we're in the city in Vibes and Scribes, and we're online on shopinireland.ie. It's a brand new website.
Okay, give me that again, because people might get more stuff.
Shopinireland.ie, and it came from a Facebook page called Shop in Ireland, and it's grown immensely over the last few weeks.
Okay, and we say to people today, please spread on Twitter at Joe Liveline or at RTE Liveline or your own hashtag, but please tag us and we'll retweet it with any information you may have about your own book, self-published, your own money going into it and not expecting or hoping to make much out of it. Not that there's any a lot of money in books unless you're J.K. Rowling or whatever, but well done Peter. It's called Murder Most Local, Historic Murders of West Cork. Great research, Peter O'Shea, and a great edition. These are just so fantastic. These are long books that will have long lives. A perfect life, a perfect tune. My Father, the Piano Tuner. Anthony Woods, good afternoon. Tony Woods.
Afternoon, Joe. Happy Christmas.
You too. Another beautiful book. Coffee table size, hardback. It's about your father, Fergus. I know you're a piano. Tell us about your dad.
My dad grew up in that mines, Drimnagh, the Crumlin, and he went into the piano business following his dad's footsteps in old tickets in the 60s. And he was a piano tuner all his life, Joe, but a very funny man, a gentleman, great at his trade. People loved him. Today, when I call to people's houses, customers talk about him still. And not a week goes by where I don't see his name or his card, business card, on the inside of a piano. So just a wonderful, wonderful man. So I just decided he deserves something nice. So why not a nice book? So we got to do is Michael Bourne from Zest Creative, who coincidentally lived 100, his office is 100 feet from where we grew up in Pimlico, came on board, and Michael just breathed life into the book with creativity. So big thanks to Michael for that too.
It's an incredible, look, beautiful colour plates, beautiful photography. Yeah. And then who came up with the idea of, did you choose 12 or 13 of people who play piano that we wouldn't necessarily know?
No, these are the unsung music teachers that play piano and learn piano. And Dad was a people's person, Joe. So I just said, let's have people in this book, real people. And some of the people in the book, you can see, have some challenges in life, and others are teachers, and others just love the piano, and there's a good range of ages, so anyone can play piano, whether you're 5 or 75. pick it up. But Dad loved people, and that was important to me, to have people in the book. And that's why we added, there's 25 stories in the back, 25 bios. So people are very passionate about the piano still, so it's great.
I presume you play the piano as well.
No, Joe, I was afraid you'd ask that. No, I don't play.
You just tune.
I just tune piano. Tuning is a trade on its own, Joe, and it used to be taught here years ago. I was lucky. I was taught by my dad's colleague, George Hill, another good tuner who would have tuned an RTE. But I didn't have to go away. But to learn the tuning today, you'd have to go to the UK or Europe.
Okay, I didn't
to learn
that.
The trade. Yeah. So
what a magnificent tribute. What a product that will last, a memento that will last hundreds of years. Where can people get it, Anthony?
Well, you can get it on my website. This year, Joe, I was planning on having a launch in the Mansion House and everything, but COVID put a stop. So next year, we hope to get all the contributors together and a few guests when we're all vaccinated. But in the meantime, you can get it on my website, woodspianotuning.ie. And when we're able to get around and talk to people, I'll try and get it into a few shops.
Okay.
Meat shops, the Kenny shop.
Well, even the piano shops should take it. And
well, Walton's Music, Stratham Pianos, and a few shops that have it. Charles Bourne Music there in Little Stephen Street there. So some of the shops have taken it on. We're all connected through Instagram anyway, so they've all asked for copies to sell. And so just a nice, pleasant table book.
I presume during COVID, because you cannot go into people's houses.
Yeah, the first lockdown was difficult. Yeah, we just stopped down tools. We all did. The second one was just part-time. We just were allowed to do some exams for people who were sitting the exams. We were recording their pieces on Zoom and sending them into the examiner. So we had to do
from
a
few jobs
then.
From the 1st of January, you cannot have any visitors into your home. Zero.
I know.
Full stop. From the 1st of January.
I've plenty to do at home, Joe. Okay. Both my wife and I are carers to an adult with special needs, so we'll be busy, Joe. Don't worry.
Okay, and I hope you'll be busy packing and posting this book out, because it's superb. And make sure you store a few copies away now in your attic or whatever, beautifully packaged for hundreds
Trinity
of years
College
to come.
Have asked me, great. Trinity have asked me for 5 books to send to depositories in Northern Ireland, right. UK, Scotland and Wales. So,
and I'd recommend that. I don't want to overwhelm Trinity, but I was looking for something I wrote 40 years ago when I was in Trinity, a magazine called Who's Right. It was a project I was doing. And I wrote to the Trinity Library and they managed to find it for me. 40, because I'd sent a copy in and they had it up in Santry or whatever. And now you don't get the copy, you get the, they'll allow you to photocopy so much of it, but it's really important depository for the nation. It really is. Anthony, Tony Woods, well done, and God bless and rest your father, your father, Fergus. That's Tony Woods, A Life in Perfect Tune, woodspianotuning.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
A few more in our self-published books. Limerick and Kerry Railways, Twilight Years, a chronicle of Newcastle West trains from the 50s to the 80s, and miscellaneous historical documents. They're just incredible. By Liam O'Mahony, again, beautifully produced, reproducing newspaper reports, tickets, records of that raid, timetables, getaway to the Dublin All-Ireland final, the semi-finals, Munster Hurling Championship semi-finals, tour of the 6th of July. There's the poster and the special trains, and the return fare from Limerick to Thurles was £1.80. Children under 15 was half fair. A lovely production. Liam O'Mahony, look it up. Emergence, a celebration of the wisdom and resilience of aging. Look at this, again, hardback from the Irish Gerontological Society, which is to do obviously with older people. And again, they reference, as so many books do, they reference the year that was in it. Older people were asked to cocoon for their own protection. So, again, it's a celebration. in terms of poetry and writing, and William Trevor and various other people about the wisdom and resilience of ageing. Rogue Tan is a novel. He lives at Pádraig Cosgrave, lives in Waterford, where he works as a public servant. No photograph. He's a novelist, poet and scholar of history. And Neville Dean, who is the subject of this, is a decorated hero of World War One who struggles to live with the peace afterwards. Great productions. Michael O'Carroll. People will know Michael O'Carroll's name more than likely from RTE. He's retired from RTE, but he's written a memoir and more, and it's called Right Time and Place. Michael O'Carroll, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
And congratulations. What a fantastic book. What a fantastic book. And I want to get it out as to as many people as possible, because it is about your life in public service and through your work in RTE. And it's obvious from your writings about RTE, which at times are very, very honest. Very honest, if not always honest. They are always honest. But you love this place, and you're the epitome of so many people who work here, and that as the epitome of public service, you're always conscious of what you were doing and the audience you were serving. Now, Michael, you're legendary as a director for hurling matches. Isn't that correct? Apart from loads of OBs.
Would that be? Yeah, you're very kind, Joe.
No, you are. You are. And then people might even recognise your voice if I let you speak as the voice of Irish rally commentating as well.
A little bit. Yeah, I did a bit. I mean, I'm interested in all sports. I was interested in all sports when I was in RTE, you know, and still am.
Tell us about the helicopter crash right at the start of the book. Riveting.
Well, that was 1974, the 14th of May, 2 days before the Dublin bombing. And that's why the actual story didn't get that much publicity, because the Dublin bombing took over the thing. It was a flight to Ballydoyle, Vincent O'Brien's place in Ballydoyle, with a pilot called Thompson Boys, and Eamon O'Connor, who's from Limerick, a brilliant cameraman. And we crashed. We hit high tension electric wires and crashed in the quarry there in Ballydoyle. But the interesting thing about it was the same helicopter and the same pilot who was hijacked in the Mount Jaya about 6 months earlier. So that's what makes the story different.
The helicopter was hijacked, that pilot was hijacked, and it was forced to fly into Mountjoy, the yard of Mountjoy, and high profile IRA leaders escaped. It was a great helicopter escape, as it was called. It was a song and story and legendary. Now, Michael, you did one thing further in this memoir, which I think speaks to its resources and your own abilities. You actually tracked down the IAA report of that helicopter crash. And you argue, given the conversation, they say in the IAA report, the aviation the accident investigation unit, they say, oh, he didn't do a run through and he didn't spot those wires. You had pointed out the wires to him earlier, but what you said, which I think is so telling, you said that the pilot, which is not referenced in the accident report, that the pilot was worried sick about the fact that he was going to have to give evidence in that trial of when the escapees were captured, and that he'd got IRA threats written in blood, and he was obsessed with this.
He was, yes, that's right. And the day that I went to Irish Helicopter's place in Dublin Airport to fly to Cashel, he said to me, don't ask me about the hijack.
Okay.
You know, and I said, well, I didn't even know about the hijack. I hadn't thought of it. And he also, I was carrying a map with me, because I know I had done a rally down in that area. I had a map of the area.
Okay.
So that we could fly to the right place. He told me, put that map away. But we ended up in Coolmore, not Ballydoyle.
Okay, the wrong place.
The wrong place, you know. But he was emotionally upset. There's no doubt about it. And when the crash was over, he acted very strangely in the hospital, you know, and they had to bring the guards in and the army to protected me when they found out who he was and what he had done.
Because he was distracted, wasn't he, in his mind?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. There's no doubt about it. I mean, the man was very distracted. And after the crash, he ran around the corridors of the hospital shouting Mau Mau, you know?
Yeah, from the Kenyan...
that's right. Yeah.
It's called Right Time and Place, a memoir. Where can people get it, Michael O'Carroll?
You can get it. I have a webpage, www.righttimeandplace.com. You can get it there by post. Or it's available in some selected Dunn stores.
Oh, well done.
And it's also available down in Dunkern Post Office, Obama Place in Moneygall, and JKC's in Nina. And
which is near your home place.
That's where my near own home place was. That's okay. Where I was.
Well, Michael, you've done a lot of work and more to come, but it's a credit to you. It really is a credit to you, not just in terms of putting down a memoir, but doing things like finding out more about incidents like what you did about that helicopter crash. It's called Right Time and Place, a memoir or more. I don't feel I've done it justice. You deserve an hour-long interview with all the stories, the incredible stories in it. That's Michael O'Carroll. Great to hear you hail and hearty, and a great public servant. Max Egan. Max, good afternoon. Are you there, Max? Max is 11. He lives in Sutton. He has two budgies. How are you, Max? Are you well?
Yeah, good.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
You have your own book.
Yeah.
Isn't that fantastic?
Yeah.
And why did you decide to write it?
Well, I was in school and my teacher asked us to write a book, and I really like golf and I like dogs, so I just decided to write about that.
But your dog in the book, his name is Spud.
Yeah.
He had a very difficult childhood, did Spud?
Yeah, he did.
Didn't he?
Yeah. Yeah.
But then he got himself together, didn't he, and he began to play golf?
Yeah.
And was he a good golfer?
Yeah, he was good.
Good. And did he wear sunglasses?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, because he was confident that he was a good golfer.
Yeah.
And two of his sisters were tennis players, isn't that right? In the book. Okay.
The book.
Well done. And it's where can people get Max Egan's book, A Dog's Life? Lettertech, I can see it.
There's an animal pet shop in Sutton, where you can get that book.
Okay, and Lettertech were they published and printed it, so you'll find it there. Congratulations, Max. It's a great achievement. It's a great achievement, A Dog's Life. Well done to you. Have you got a dog, Max?
I've got a dog called Rocky.
Rocky. What type of dog is Rocky?
He's a Labrador.
Oh, so is that Rocky on the cover?
Yeah.
Oh, well done, Rocky. He's acting as Spud. And well done to you, Max, and well done to your school, St. Fintan's National School. Yes, sir.
My dad wants me to tell you that my dad sent the book to Shane Larry and he wrote back a note to me.
Ah, well done. Hold on to that note, won't you, Max? Hold on to it. Well done. Well done. That's Max Egan. Kim Cromwell. Kim, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. How are
your
you doing?
Your book is called The Girl Power Guide to Surviving Life.
Life, yeah.
And it's a self-care journal for teenage girls. Mm-hmm. Well done. Well done.
Thank you.
And it's a journal. And you have, and these are becoming really popular, where you go through your goals and you ask yourself questions. Now, some of them are very expensive, as you know, in the big department stores or in Moleskine and all that carry on. But you say, you know, you write down, check yourself. What prompted you to write it, Kim?
So I work with teenagers. I'm a child and adolescent psychotherapist.
Okay.
And I just felt like listening just wasn't enough. You know, these young people were generously sharing their lives and their stories and issues they were having with me. And I suppose in response to that, I wanted to offer some kind of a solution. And I was just gathering some information, and there was a lot of same patterns, like issues around self-esteem and confidence and anxiety and relationships and consent. So I just thought I'd do like a chapter on each of those, but make it a journal, so a page a day. And I think particularly with COVID-19, just to give themselves a bit of structure and a bit of consistency.
Well done, well done. And it's, again, beautifully produced. It's in big A4 format, but really well organised. And you have the menstrual cycle, pads or tampons. You ask all the questions that young girls are asking themselves. And sometimes they get a bit self-conscious about things which they shouldn't be self-conscious about, making friends, conflict resolution, building resilience, attitude to failure, which my resources and support. Well done, Kim. Where can people get it?
It's available on Amazon at the moment. So if you go to Amazon Books and just type in Girl Power Guide, and that's usually the book that comes up.
Why isn't it? Has anyone done this before? This is brilliant.
Nobody has done it, and I actually turned to Kathy Kelly, and she helped me. And helping me because she was really encouraging it.
And this is a book that you will open every single day of the year, isn't it?
Yeah, hopefully. That's what I would like for the girls to be able to dip in and out whenever they need it. So it's not a novel, as in you don't read it from front cover to back cover.
It's a companion. It's a companion. Yeah. And it's a helper and a friend and an embrace. Well done, well done.
Thank you so much, Joe.
I think it's a fantastic thing to do. It's a self-care journal for teenage girls. It's by Kim Cromwell, and you get it on Amazon. Is that correct? Just Google it. Okay. Well done, Kim.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thanks, Joe.
Congratulations. Thank you very much. Well done. 5155 Marmarchand.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
Mentioning Kim Cromwell's self-published book there, The Kids Coach. Is by David Nugent. It's fitness fun for the young. Fitness fun for the young. And Dave, fair play, Dave. Great idea. And go on to thekidscoach.ie. Well, we're going to need all this stuff for 2021. Irish Peaks. Look at this beautiful coffee table book. A celebration of Ireland's highest mountains. And it's just beautifully produced. IrishPeaks.ie. It's a compilation that's been led by Alan and Margaret Tees, two long-standing mountaineering members. But it's going through, look at the photography, going through the details. You go onto the Black Stairs Mountains on Carrickdove, the Black Rock, 932 metres, ascent details, 4 hours, 10.5k, 720 metres ascent. The path is generally path and track with some rough terrain and heather towards the summit, limited. And then you have possible descents. What is... Apart from if you never ever left your armchair, this would be a magnificent book. It's produced by Mountaineering Ireland. Go for it, Mountaineering Ireland, Irish Peaks. And remember, they will stay the same for thousands of years, millions of years, billions of years. Is Victor Sullivan there? Victor, good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon.
Congratulations, Victor. You've written a story called Who Was Johnny Wheels? He was crippled at the age of 9, unable to... This is a true story. Unable to walk.
True,
and his relationship to you, and how did you find out about him, Victor?
Well, that was the biggest surprise of my life. Was when I was a small lad, I was always suspicious that there was some secret in my granny's house. This was down in Castle Dunbar in town of Glaston.
Okay.
And I was... there were strange things that... Scratches on the floor and scratches on the door, and underneath the table there were things written up underneath the table, and I wanted to know what they were, and I was always given the brush off, and I got suspicious that there was some kind of a big secret in the house, that there had been a murderer. I eventually finished up thinking that there was a murderer in the house, and they're trying to hide all the history about him. And it was really dating back to a time when anyone who was crippled or deformed in any way was a thing of shame, and they were locked away in attics, and they were put into the Cork Lunatic Asylum. Just think of the name of it. Cork Lunatic, they handed it up afterwards, and they called it Our Lady's Hospital, but it was known as the Cork Lunatic Asylum. The Home for Protestant Incurables was another one. That's now St. Luke's Home. And... They were just ashamed of any family member who had a physical disability or deformity.
So it was your relation, Johnny Gill, Sunday, 1872, a farm accident ensured that 9-year-old Johnny Gill would never walk, stand or sit again.
That's right.
Good God.
Right. But there's a neighbour of mine, Dr. Bill Paul, and he was just living across the road from me, and he got, was interested in it, and he discovered that there was an outbreak of polio at the same time as Johnny was injured, and he reckoned that Johnny got polio at the same time as the same day he was injured.
No? Okay. So, and how did Johnny get around? This is the name, this is the book, Johnny Wheels.
Yeah. He built after, I mean, he was literally locked upstairs in his room for several years. I mean, this happened when he was, what, 9 years old or
shocking,
something.
Shocking, shocking.
And he was there, he was about 17, I suppose, before he came out of it. And he built this trolley for himself that he could drag himself around on. But his mother was absolutely horrified when she saw him out in the open air. Because what will happen is the postman sees you, sort of thing. Wow. He was not supposed to be seen. But he just wasn't going to live down to be. He was highly intelligent, abnormally intelligent. And he could turn his hand to almost anything. And he was able to earn a living and earn money far better than most of the local men and women were. So, you know, that was really his ability to... He made chairs. I've actually sat on some of his chairs in different houses down in the Bear area, just calling in. Well, not anybody here know anything about the story about Johnny Wheels. And, oh, yeah, that chair over there, he made that, this sort of thing.
Well, it's one, congratulations on memorialising this incredible man who, apart from his family, outside his family, inside his family, would have been forgotten. And it's also social history about how we as a nation, we weren't a nation officially at the time, but we as a country treated people who were different, and how people who were different had to rise up in every sense of that word and try and get, for example, in Johnny Wheels' case, mobility, and he achieved it. So, well, where can people get the book?
The book is available in the bookshops around West Cork anyway. Mm-hmm. I've just been in touch with my sister who's doing all the marketing, and she's down in Clonakilty. And anybody who wants to get hold of it is iFundraise.ie/Johnny.
Okay. All one word. iFundraise, the letter I. iFundraise, one word, .ie/ to say, Johnny. Yeah. And there was an incredible man. And well done to you, Victor.
And that's all lowercase text now.
The people will find it. Don't worry. And we will tweet it as well, because it's a... It's a fantastic addition to our social history as well. Well done, Victor Sullivan. Who was Johnny Wheels? Let me go to Maura Murphy Gibson. Maura Murphy Gibson, how are you?
Fine, Joe. Thank you very much.
And another fan. Tell us about this book. It's called Who Was Granny?
Yes. Yes. Quite a few years ago, I got curious to know who was my granny.
Okay.
Because we had very little information on who my grandmother was. She was a Protestant lady who ran away from home in Wicklow to Dublin with her Catholic boyfriend and got married. At that time, a marriage between a Catholic and a Protestant would have been very much frowned upon by her family, resulting in that they totally disowned her. Totally disowned her. So in Dublin, she married. They then rented Drimnagh Castle, where their children were born. Their first son, who died in Drimnagh Castle on New Year's Eve 1903. Their second son, Joseph, was to die on Bloody Sunday 1920.
All right. 100 years ago.
100 years ago.
And what inspired you to write? Look at this. What?
Because I wanted to know, when I became a granny, I wanted my grandchildren to know their ancestry, which led me on a journey that took me back to the 1400s in Scotland through to the 1798 rebellion in Wicklow. I did the Protestant lines, and then my own father was from Wexford, so of course I did the Murphy Wexford Lions.
Well done. And you discover things like Joseph Langrell.
Yes.
He was a brother of Thomas, Chief of Police in Ottawa.
Yes, he was.
And he was born in Wicklow. And what's his relationship to you?
Yes, his relationship to me. He would be my granny's cousin.
Wow, you've uncovered incredible land grab.
I've covered the Kilgrenny evictions in Wexford. I've covered Bloody Sunday and the other two trainers who died during the War of Independence. Young John Trainer, who was 16, and Thomas Trainer from Tullow.
Well done. And where can people get... And again, it's a fine book. It's over A4 size, over 300 pages, full of illustrations, research, documents, photographs. Where can people get it?
Joseph, there's one thing there I think you would be interested in that book.
Okay.
And it's on Bluebell Graveyard, and it's near the back of the book. And I know you've an interest in young children who died in Dublin.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's young children in that who died in Dublin in the 1800s.
Wow.
The book, Wicklow County Council took several copies of the book for their library and for research purposes. It can be. It's available in the bookshop in Gorey, and it's available in Crafty Crack in the Glen of Amal in Wicklow.
Okay.
And it's also available from myself. I have a Facebook page, and my email address.
Okay, and your email address is.
Yes. Now I do have a website.
Okay.
But when COVID came in, because of my age, we rested the website.
Okay. But because of his popularity.
Yes, yeah. Well, okay. when I wrote this book first, I only intended it for my own grandchildren.
Yeah. Well, that's every library in the country, every public library should have a copy of this reference. It's a brilliant book, but it's a fantastic reference book. It really is. It's called
about as well was my own growing up and my own childhood.
I loved it.
You know, school, which, you know, my grandchildren now,
mesmerised, yeah.
Completely different.
And remember, books, a lot of the books we have today will grow in value, and I mean in the true sense of the word value and importance as the years go by. Who was Granny? A Family History, Maura Murphy Gibson. You're listening to Self-Published Books. I will read out again some of the government regulations, which, from the government document, not from reports. And again, there's some lack of clarity in some places. Visitors to your home from Christmas Eve, from the 24th of December, I presume is a minute after midnight on Christmas Eve morning. Two other households max from the 27th, which I presume is a minute after midnight as such on the 27th of December. One other household maximum from the 1st of January. No visitors whatsoever. I've thrown in the whatsoever, but that's where it says. Travel outside your county. Yes, from February 27th. People are doing it now. But from February 27th, yes, from the 27th of December, the day after St. Stephen's Day, no travel outside your county except to return. In other words, if you go away before that morning for your Christmas visit to family or friends or your break or whatever, you can return, but you can't leave your county thereafter. And from the 1st of January, full stop, no travel outside your county. Restaurants and pubs closed at 3 p.m. on Christmas Eve. Places of worship, 50 people max on from the 24th of December, and from the 27th, private online worship only. Retail, all retail is open, but no January sales. Weddings, 25 max up until the 3rd of January, where it drops to 6 people max. And that is goes on from there. And I read out, well, I'm just reading out from the government document. Don't be giving out to me, and people are entitled to give out to me if they wish, but the government document on nursing homes, it doesn't give a date, but it says visits to long-term residential care facilities, nursing and care homes, suspended with the exception of visits required for critical and compassionate circumstances. And we're trying to get clarity on that as to when those visits are suspended. From 51551, my John.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
Can you imagine the opening line? In 1936, when I was 17, I was taken from my family and my home in Berlin. That's the opening of a book called Motherland by Lauren Veronica Doyle. A young woman, there's a photograph of her with our president. She's a senior cycle student when this photograph was taken at Mount Sackville Secondary School. And this novel formed part of her transition year, Gashka programme. Can you imagine? It's not incredible. That incredible. A fantastic novel of nearly 300 pages, and the reference is Motherland by Lauren Veronica Dial. Go for that. Starving Men, masterfully written. This is the blurb on the cover. Siobhan Finkelman. An unusual name, so it should be unusual. Should be easy to find. Siobhan Finkelman, Finkelman. The bloodiest revenge takes centuries. Don't you better believe it? And remember, the minister was saying on the 1 o'clock news, like these are the regulations that are coming in. But the overall advice is. This is the overall advice is, and Stephen Donnelly couldn't have been clearer. The overall advice is only travel if you have to travel. Please, please, please. You couldn't underestimate the seriousness of the situation we were in, as laid down by the minister and articulated by the minister, that the NPHET advice is do as little as possible in the next period. Please do as little as possible. And everyone has to make some judgments in terms of things they have to do. But that is the overall statement from the government about days and dates is there. But the overall umbrella is only if necessary. Kathleen Briody. Kathleen, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
Again, congratulations. It's called The Life and Times of Pat and Kathleen Briody. Is that the correct pronunciation of her name? What, and again, a beautiful hardcover book. Really well produced and embossed. What is the idea? It's your life. It's your life story, I presume.
It's our life. I suppose it's our life story, really. And we have been meaning to do this for quite some time. But our brother-in-law in Abbey Leaks, John Delaney, really advised us strongly, and we kind of got down to doing it. And I have a cousin in Donegal who had done a couple of books, and he also advised it. So we got down to doing it in pandemic year.
And I say, well done, a great.
And
your family love it, I'd say.
They love it, actually. Our grandson came on board, Niall Briody, and he gave us a great hand and a great dig out at it, and it made it possible for us. And my daughter-in-law heard your ad on the on your programme, so that's how I sent in the book to you in the first instance.
Well done. So, and where can people get the book, if they wish?
It's just a family book, and it's not for sale, I suppose,
Well done. But it's
just a family.
And was it easy? Okay. Like, it's such a beautiful production. Was that easy to do, Kathleen?
Not that easy now, Joe, as you know yourself, because we go back a long way, and we kind of go back maybe 70, 80 years, and not further, in parts. And we kind of got it hard enough. We got up into the attic and got some bits and pieces and
photos
and things like that.
But isn't this a beautiful thing to gift your family?
Well, I think it is, and I think they're all delighted with it, and they have, you know, asked us about it, and they have read it a couple of times, some of them, and they have come back to know, you know, where, and we never knew that, and we never knew.
And remember a book, I'm looking at the strength even of this, the way it's so beautifully produced. This is a book that would sit on a shelf, could sit on a shelf for hundreds of years.
Well, please,
hundreds
God.
Of years.
Somebody
well
might pick
done.
It up maybe in 100 years or whatever.
It will be social history, social history.
Exactly.
The Life and Times of Pat and Kathleen Briody. Yeah. Well done, Kathleen. Let me go to Mark Lean. Mark, good afternoon. You're in Kerry. It's the official biography of the great DJ Corton. It's called Corton Call. Tell us what prompted you to write this one.
Well, Joe, good afternoon and Merry Christmas. It was the book that almost wasn't, Joe. He's a very, very humble guy. We were touring together on a show called Legends of Las Vegas, and I was very familiar with the Corton family in Tralee, very, very musical family. And I was very privy to their whole... the musical genius that pervaded throughout that family, from brother Billy, that was on stage at a very young age, was on TV age 12 in front of 100 million people in America, probably one of the very first Irish acts ever to be on TV stateside. He was called the Irish Wonder Boy. Then Henry Corton, his brother, was a drummer with the Bob Hope Orchestra. And so DJ was on stage with Brendan Boyer, of course, Brendan in the news this year because he passed away. You know, three shows a night, six nights a week, and DJ shared the stage each night with Brendan Boyer. And the stories that they had in his lifetime, the people they met, Tom Jones, all these people coming to see, watch DJ's show and watch him perform. And very, very humble guy. And over the years that we were performing, I got all these stories out of him, and eventually I said, you know, that would make a fantastic book. And
where can people get the book, Mark?
Because marklean.online. If they go there, they get it and they get a free CD and it gets posted out to their door.
Okay, and it's been a great year. Paddy Cole has published a great memoir. Frank Clark, the artist, who's also involved in the music world, he's published a fantastic memoir as well. And they this is been. Called Curtain Call, the official biography, The Life and Times of DJ Curtain by Mark Lean. Mark, well done and congratulations. Loads more.
Thank you, Joe.
Loads more books. We try and put as many of them as possible children's books to beat the band. It's an incredible genre. It really is an incredible genre. This is Mike Lawler's book, Son of an Outsider, Journey from Drimna to Aylesbury Road through Family Guinness, Films, Chronic Pain and Industrial Relations. What's not to be interested in that book? It's fantastic. He joined Guinness as a 14 and he was an outsider. It's available in Books on the Green in Sandy Mount Village, and as I say, it is written by Mike Lawler. Overtime tomorrow, a little live line, and then on Thursday morning, before the lockdown, so to speak, at 9 o'clock, live line Thursday morning, Christmas Eve special with Coda Lyon and Erica Cody and Jack Lukeman and Declan and Alphorn. Okay, talk to you tomorrow. 1:45, Annette Egan produced. Ray Darcy is next.